I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum. Oh, shit. Oh.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single freaking frippin' floppin' episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, the Rebels head to the Mandalorian-controlled Concordat to negotiate safe passage for their fleet. The warrior protectors of the system prove to be less than welcoming, however, and it's up to Kanan and Sabine to turn this group into friends or enemies. There will be... Oh god, Hera's injured, guys. Guys, Hera's injured and Finally, we got some freaking good Sabine content, and... we're talking Protectors of Concord Dawn this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good. When you were talking about all of Clone... there's five seasons of Clone Wars, right? Or Rebels.
Six.
Oh, six. Okay. I thought there... for some reason, I was thinking five, and I'm like, we're right about the halfway point.
Rebels?
In Rebels, yes. Yes, how many?
Oh no, there's only four seasons in Rebels. Sorry.
Four seasons, so we're beyond the halfway point. We're beyond the point of no return in Rebels.
It's so weird, guys. The reason we were talking Clone Wars seasons before we started recording, that's why we're talking about this. It's so weird because the first season of Rebels is like, I think, 12 episodes. This season's a full 22 plus a movie. I think season 3 is 20, 21, 22 episodes, and then season 4 is like 15 episodes. So, like, season 1 and 4 are, like, not full seasons. Seasons 2 and 3 are full seasons. So it's just all weird. Actually, season 4 might have been 13 episodes now I think about it.
I remember it being really short, or seeming really short anyway.
Well, they also dumped the second half of the season over the course of, like, 4 weeks, because they would double up on the episodes. So they would release 2 a week, and they would be, like...
that's right.
Yeah,
it was over in, like, 2 months.
Yeah, so they, like, dumped half of season 4 in, like, 4 weeks. So, some of those episodes, I'm like, yeah, this is great. Because, like, I can't imagine watching Jedi Knight and Doom separate. Because, like, I watched those two episodes together, and it's Kanan's death. And watching those two episodes, like Kanan's death and then the emotional follow-up, I can't imagine them putting a week in between that and separating them. Like, it's going to be weird for us to do that because... I mean, that's how just the nature of our show. But, like, some episodes, like, I think Crawler, Commander, and Kindred, I think are the name of the episodes. I'm like, yeah, you could have put a week here. That's fine. Flesh that out a little bit more. It's fine. So, I need to explain my inside joke, Chris, before we get into this episode.
Okay. The raw.
So, over on Tumblr, I do episode recaps. Done in GIFs. And when Finn Rao was introduced, I just would write in big letters like rah. But then, like, after a while, I would just start, like, throwing letters in there, so it'd be like rah blah 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 blah, and then I would just start doing that. So I'm gonna be doing that for these notes. But that's where that comes from, of me just being ridiculously calling him rah, Finn Rao, rah 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 rah.
So it sounds like you're turning him into Chewbacca lines from the original Marvel comics.
Well, he shouldn't have a last name of Rao. Did you have a good week, Chris?
Yeah, interesting week you were talking.
I had a busy week. We were busy at work. I work in a rib joint, and we had a record amount of catering this week, and it was nice. It was like 90 degrees outside every day, so it was averaging about 125 to 135 in our kitchen, and sometimes smoky. So yeah, it was a pretty physical week. And then my weekend I spent, we cleared out our garage to have it fixed, but then we did some more clearing out and then organizing and throwing away and stuff. And since we fixed our roof, the inside of our garage got a little wet, so there's been a lot of drying out and cleaning. And but yeah, but that's all good stuff. I'll be getting, I got room, you can walk around in circles in my garage. You could go in there and do stuff if you had to now, whereas before there was just sort of a path through the middle of it. And I'll be getting tips for all those all those caterings down the line, so that'll be nice by the end of summer.
That's nice.
Yeah, so it all pays off, but yeah.
I had a pretty good week. Megan came down from North Carolina last weekend and spent time with me, so I got to see Megan last weekend. And then this past week, I started my season one rewatch of Star Wars Resistance. And the reason I wanted to give the show a rewatch, and I've never done this with a Filoniverse show where I wanted to rewatch a season before the new season came out, but I felt like I really wanted to do that with Resistance because I remember the first time I watched the show, I felt like the first half of the season was like really rough, but the second half of the season was one of the most like solid opening seasons of a Filoniverse show.
It took you a little while to warm up to. I remember I warmed up to it a little faster than you did. But yeah. I'm the visual guy, and I liked the visual style of it, so I was hooked right on that from the start.
Yeah, but it like, cause, and that was the other thing, because I remember talking to Megan, like, when the first half was running, I was like, I'm not even sure if I like this show. Like, I loved elements of the show, but I wasn't sure if I, like, liked the show. And so I really wanted to give it a rewatch. And I'm currently in the middle of the Doza Dilemma, which is a little over the halfway point. So I'm in the section of the show I really watched, but like what I really wanted to rewatch was the beginning, because like that's where I felt I wanted to get under it.
You wanted to do what we're doing with Rebels right now and see how you feel about everybody now that you know a little more about them, huh?
And that's the thing. So like, here's the thing. If you guys haven't watched Resistance, it's a really strong show. And like, I've been calling, and I'm also writing a piece about it, too, for over on Geeky Girl Experience. I'm in the middle of writing a piece, which is what I wanted to do all summer, and I finally got around to it. It's not published yet. I'm still working on it. But, like, the first half of the season, in the beginning, is a lot stronger than I remember it, now that I know the plot of season one. And they were laying down, like, plot lines episode one. Like, there's a huge twist in the finale, and they put those plot lines, like, the beginning, like, eggs of those in episode one, which, like, so when that happened, I was just like, oh, it started here. Oh, God. Wow. They did that. And so, like, in so much of it, and I call, like, Resistance blue-collar Star Wars, and the reason I call it blue-collar Star Wars is, like, the way I imagine it is, like, an episode of Clone Wars, and, like, Anakin and Ahsoka go to a village, they save the village from the Separatists, and they leave. And Resistance is as if Resistance is about if we stayed with that village. And
yeah, like, Resistance is the village, yeah, for sure.
It's the village, and like that's what Resistance is about. It's about normal, everyday people.
Right.
And it's
right.
about
it's not
like
about the
how
people at the high levels or the people at the like bounty hunter gritty criminal levels, you know,
it's
normal day to day.
Like these people are janitors. They own kiosks and markets. They have shops. They have cantinas.
Right.
And Resistance is about these, what happens when the big movie plots with like the First Order and the Resistance, like what happens when these big ass movie plots, how they affect everyday people. And that's what's so good about it. And
it's the most different of the Filoni cartoons for sure.
And they cram so much in a single episode. And that's what I really like about it. Like, I watched the episode Secrets and Holograms, which is about Kaz and Tora spending, like, having, like, a little day adventure together. And they go to Tora's room and stuff like that. And actually, no. A better example would be, what's it called? Bebo. Bebo would be a really good example. Bebo is about when Niku finds this little pet and then a monster attacks the station. And it seems like it could be filler. But what's so interesting about the Colossus, which is the ship that it takes place on, is that everyone's kind of on top of each other and everyone's crammed together. So in the episode Bebo, you have like characters like Sonara and Captain Doza. neither of them have interacted with each other, but you know that they're going to clash at some point. Like, they're going to be all brought together at some point. And that's what's so interesting, is that it has all these parallel stories going ahead, like going along with each other, and they're all running along to each other. They're all there, and eventually they're going to meet. And that's what's really interesting about the show. And that's what I like about it. Like, it's about, like, the first half I've kind of realized was all just world building and character building, because you have to care about these people. And it takes place 6 months before the events of The Force Awakens. And what happens is, that's really interesting, is how are these regular people going to act when the Force Awakens crashes into them, pretty much, when that timeline hits them? Because there's, like, a little old woman that hits on Kaz. What's going to happen when that little old woman is forced into this war? Like, they literally drag these people into a war. And what's going to happen? What are Orca and Flix? They own a shop. What are these shop owners going to do when they have to go to war? Like, are they going to help, or are they going to be like, no, fuck it, we didn't want this? And so it's really interesting. The only thing that I have any gripes about still, and I hate this about the show, is to me that the two worst episodes are The Triple Dark and Fuel for the Fire. And sadly enough, they are episode 2 and 3. And episode 2 and 3 are the roughest and the worst episodes of the season. And it's right out of the gate. So, like, you have a pretty okay pilot episode in The Recruit, but then you get The Triple Dark and Fuel of the Fire, and the show trips. Like, it's all the worst qualities of the show in episode 2 and 3. But here's the thing. I don't suggest skipping those two, because this show is so much about world building. They introduce characters and plot lines that do come back later. So if you haven't watched Resistance yet, I hate to tell you, but episode 2 and 3 are really rough, but just go through them, watch them anyway, because those characters come back and those plot lines come back. And it's just, but the thing is, like, I'm really enjoying Resistance a lot more now that I know what's going to happen. And I like it a lot more now that I'm binging it too, because I watched like 7 episodes in a day. And it's a really good binging show, because it really, like, all those plot lines really go along really well together when you have them, like, on top of each other that fast. It was a little bit rougher watching it week by week, because it was like, oh, that was nice. And it felt a lot slower when I was watching it week by week. But when you watch them all together, like, in a binge, like 3-4 episodes at a time, it works a lot better. And I can't recommend Resistance enough. It's probably one of the most solid, good, best Filoniverse shows of, like, and it's a very solid first season once you get past that episode 2 and 3. And it's just great. There's so much going on there, and I really love Resistance, and I just had to talk about it because I have it on the brain.
All right,
we're gonna do it in the show one day.
All right, one day, yeah.
Yeah. But I just, you
hopefully
know, season,
there'll be enough time they'll forget all this by the time we get there.
Well, season 2 is coming in the fall, so, like, I think it's October. They haven't released an official date, but I think they mentioned October. I think. Which would make sense, because that's roughly when season 1 came out. So if you haven't done Resistance, like, please, like, go watch it. It's so good. It's so good. It's so, like, and it's so subtle. Like, that's the thing. It's just it's a super subtle show, and everything just sneaks up on you. And it
always feels like, to watch it so they're ready to keep up with our show when we get to it.
Yeah. And, like, probably the best part of the show is, like, you have this time bomb. Like this ticking time bomb over the entire first season, because you're, like, watching these, like little adventures, and they're fun, but you know eventually you're going to get to The Force Awakens, and it's coming. And so it's like, that was a fun adventure. The feels are coming. And it's weird knowing what's going to happen. It was kind of like that in Clone Wars, but it was different, because when we were watching Clone Wars, it was that feeling of nothing can happen to Anakin and Obi-Wan. But, like, we were scared for, like, Ahsoka and Rex, because they were original characters. And it's kind of the same feeling, only it's different. Like, you have all these characters that they're in a peacetime, they're having fun, but we, the viewer, know that, like, Hosnian Prime is coming. And it's,
yeah, the only characters we know are safe are Finn and BB-8.
Yeah, Poe and BB-8.
Poe, yeah.
And so, and that's kind of like the added thing of, like, you know, there's a time bomb coming. So, like, you have this cute little episode where, like, Neeku gets a pet, and you're like, this is really fun. What's going to happen to Neeku when he gets dragged into the war at the end? And that's kind of the whole feeling about it. You're like, this is great. and it's fun, and you're having a great time, and then you remember The Force Awakens is coming. And that's kind of the interesting, kind of weird, like, meta part of the show that I really appreciate about it. So go watch Resistance. I just wanted to talk about it because I have it on the brain. So.
All right.
Well, all right. What do you think of Protectors of Concord Dawn?
What did I think of it?
Yeah.
I liked it. I don't think it's a standout episode, but it has a couple standout things in it that I really liked.
I feel like this is what Blood Sisters should have been. And I have that note, and I'll talk about it more in depth. But I enjoyed it more than
Oh, yeah. Oh, the way... Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Like her past seems way more real in this than it did in Blood Sisters.
Yeah. And I actually forgot this episode existed. So it was another episode where I was like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
This happened. I also like this episode because it has a lot of Clone Wars ties to it and a tie to the Kanan the Last Padawan issue. Which I'm about to talk
about.
Yes,
it did.
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed that too.
I know. I got notes about all that. So, well, you ready to get into it?
I am ready.
Here we go. The Protector of Concord Dawn is the 28th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on January 27, 2016. It was written by Henry Gilroy and Kevin Hopps, and directed by Brad Rau. Some extra information for you. Finn Rau is voiced by Kevin McKidd. His other works include Grey's Anatomy, Call of Duty, and Rome. This episode reveals that Sabine's family, Clan Wren, was associated with House Vizsla, who was part of the splinter group Death Watch. Death Watch was the group that joined forces with Darth Maul during the Clone Wars and helped murder Duchess Satine. This episode was released the same day the comic issue Kanan and the Last Padawan number 10 was released. The third battle of Mygeeto that was referenced in this episode was the story of that issue. During the battle, Kanan, then known as Padawan Caleb Doom, fights alongside his master, Depa Bialba. Balaba. I always mis-say her name. Balaba. I always want to say Bialba. It's not. It's Balaba. On Mygeeto. And there
Ginkgo
are
Biloba.
Biloba. Balaba. 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 Ding. Dong. Anyway. They are cut off and nearly ambushed by a large force of separatist battle droids, but they are saved by the arrival of Finn Rau and his Skull Squadron. The young Caleb Doob was left wishing he could thank Rau for helping him, which he is able to do upon meeting Rau in this episode. Dave Filoni named the character Finn Rau after the episode's director, Brad Rau. The markings on top of Finn Rau's helmet are from early Joe Johnson artwork exploring Boba Fett for The Empire Strikes Back. In the Rebels Recon for this episode, Dave Filoni says he likes to think that Sabine's mother was in the Death Watch group in the Clone Wars. He believes that her mother was in the throne room when Darth Maul killed Pre Vizsla. Dave also explains the structure of the houses and clans in Mandalore are kind of like a pyramid. First, there was the ruler, and then there were the protectors, who were like the King's Guard. Under them were houses. And he gave the example of Duchess Satine. So while she was the ruler of Mandalore, she was part of House Kryze. And then there was also House Vizsla, so he gave a couple examples. And then, so ruler, protectors, houses. The clans were smaller families that were sworn to the houses, and multiple clans could serve that house. Clan Wren, Sabine's family, was sworn to House Vizsla. So that's kind of the pyramid that we're going for. And finally, because of the Maul taking over the Mandalore arc in the Clone Wars, Bo-Katan had told Obi-Wan Kenobi to tell the Republic what happened on Mandalore. This brought the Republic to Mandalore. When it transitioned into the Empire, the new Imperial government had a foot in the door. Henry Gilroy explained that because Mandalore has such political power and military power, the Empire has a very soft occupation on the planet. They had to put people in place to keep an eye on the planet. You know who also has a soft occupation?
Keeping an eye on the planet.
With your soft occupation. How you doing, Yoda?
Keeping occupied.
Did you have a good week?
Yes.
What'd you do this
yes.
week?
Yes. What happens in Dagobah stays in Dagobah.
Ooh. Maybe I don't want to know.
Froggy went a-courtin'.
Well, are you ready for your question?
Oh, yes, question. Yes, many questions for Yoda.
So I have to apologize to one of our listeners, mostly Palsy Kelly. I wrote one of your Yoda questions for this week in a notebook because I was like, oh, I just literally jot this down, which I normally don't do. I usually put them in a Google Doc. I don't know what possessed me to write in a notebook. But I had guests over last weekend, and I was cleaning, and I misplaced the notebook. So I didn't have time to go back through the Facebook comments to try and find your question. So, Paul, your question is coming. I will find it. I'm sorry.
Can't find your notebook.
I know. I'm so sorry, Paul. It was my bad, because it was a Paul C. Kelly question. So it's as soon as I go through the Facebook comments or find the notebook, I'll ask your question. But it did give me an idea. Yoda, how do you organize things? Like, what's your organization of, like, your house, your life, your planner? How do you organize things in your life?
Not by size. Size matters not. Yoda has Yoda's cane, tunic, bed, and metal pot. Nothing else to organize. Organize Yoda's thoughts? Why?
Yeah, you're kind of crazy, Yoda. You don't need to organize your thoughts.
Keep it simple. Real simple.
That... You know who I think is really good at organizing?
No. No. Say it, do not.
Yeah. It makes him do. Mace Windu.
Yoda, must be organized to keep all the blankets wet.
And Yaddle.
Ah!
That's all I have for you, Yoda. Did you... Oh my god, did you take all of Mace's wet blankets? What?
You pissed off Yoda this week, man.
That's what I do.
You gotta yaddle him every week. What the hell?
I know. Well, my dad always said it's better to be pissed off than pissed on.
Every week you hit him with the yaddle paddle.
The yaddle paddle. Yeah, I try to throw him off this week. I try to throw him off a little bit, so be a little more sneaky about my yaddles.
Yeah, gotta be sneaky about your yaddle.
We got a sneaky yaddle. All right, so act one.
Act one.
We open with the Ghost crew hooking up with Phoenix Squadron. They just got back from a supply run, but those pesky Imperials are making it hard for them to move around the Outer Rim. They need a new hyperspace route. And Sabine is like, I have an idea. She suggests Concord Dawn, a Mandalorian colony not in Imperial territory yet. And Rex explains that the Mandalorians were used to train clones and that they're warriors. That system probably hasn't fallen easily to the Empire. But the issue is that no one knows who the Concord Dawn protectors are loyal to, and Sabine says that they're probably loyal to themselves. Commander Sato is like, so we'll just all go in, pew, 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 and show our strength to these warriors. And Kanan's like, hey there, Jedi in the room here. Let's go in with diplomacy instead. But Sato points out that they're warriors. But Hera argues back that they shouldn't make another enemy if they don't have to. They could get permission for the hyperspace route and possibly make some allies. And Commander Sato's like, fine, you go ahead, Captain Space Mom, and take your Mando daughter with you. So Space Mom and Mando daughter go out with some Phoenix Squadron to call some people from Phoenix Squadron to Concord Dawn, and they're met by some ships being led by a man named Finn, who scuffs who scoffs at them for coming in peace. The only time I stopped writing that out was Act 3, where I'm just like, I'm running out of ways to write this. who scoffs at them for coming in peace. And it's stressful, as Hera explains why they're there, but has heard enough of these rebels, and he works for the Empire. And rawr, pulls back and fires on Phoenix Squadron.
I'm just wondering what, like, everybody in the house thinks I'm doing just by, like, screaming at the microphone.
Spokes!
That's all they hear coming out of your room is just like,
my cat Spokes is behind me and she's judging me for the weird noises I'm making. It's fine. I don't need your approval, cat. Anyway, so they take evasive actions and two members of their crew get shot down. Hera peels off to give Sabine an opening to get out of there. And Hera swoops around in her A-Wing, shoots down one of the enemy ships, and Sabine gets out of there. But Hera gets hit as her ship jumps into hyperspace. Kanan's space dad is waiting on the command ship. He sees Sabine coming out of hyperspace, and his space daughter is panicking because she doesn't know where Hera is. And then, Hera's ship comes out, and it's smoking and on fire and breaking apart, and it's all quiet. And Sabine panics, while space dad looks super worried about his wife. What'd you think of Act 1?
Pretty good. Those Mandos do not fuck around.
No, they do not. They are just like, hey, all you rebels, get the fuck off our lawn.
They're living in the shadow of a just blown out planet. Like half the planet just blown out with rubble. I don't know how
that,
the physics of that work. It's just sort of sitting there, I guess, but it's weird. It looks great.
I have that as one of my notes because one of my absolute favorite things in Star Wars is half blown up planets. I love the look at them. I love how, like, they're somehow, like, the half the planet's probably inhabitable. Another one that comes to mind in the Star Wars comics for Marvel, they have a storyline called Ashes of Jeddah, and it's after the events of Rogue One, and, like, half of Jeddah is still there, and the other half is not. And it's one of my favorite things of Star Wars is half-blown-up planets. They're just always so cool to look at.
I don't know how they work like science physics wise, but yeah, they are cool. These Filoni cartoons bring to life a lot of the visual elements of Star Wars, but just also a lot of just the beautiful visual elements of like science fiction book covers and stuff, which could be way more, you know, detailed and realistic than a movie or something like that. And now we have the technology to, like, have someone flying past a smashed-out planet and have it look, you know, like a painting. I love it. The only other note I have in here besides the blown-out planet and the Mandos don't fuck around is that medical droid had an oddly creepy voice.
It was actually voiced by Vanessa Marshall, who is Hera's voice actor.
Oh, really? He almost just had, like, this, like... kind of like, oh, trust me, or she, or whatever, the robot voice, you know, trust me, sort of thing. I don't know. There was something just oddly that I couldn't exactly put my finger on it, but I was like, I don't trust that medical droid. I don't like that medical droid. That's all I got.
Well, for me, I didn't actually have a lot for Act 1. All my notes are relatively shallow, because one was the half-blown-up planet. I love the animation of Hera's damaged ship when it comes out of hyperspace and it's smoking and sparking on fire and bits are like floating off of it. It's really gorgeous.
Like that's also something we've never seen before.
Yeah. Like it's just a really, really pretty look. I mean, it sounds terrible because like Hera's like hurt and injured, but like the actual image of the ship just like rotating slowly when it comes out of hyperspace and it's like smoking and like bits are flying off of it. It's just a really pretty shot. I loved it.
And the way it's animated makes it look like it just used its last bit of energy before it died to go through hyperspace.
Yeah. Ezra has the line, diplomacy won the day for once, and then Kanan followed up with, there was a time where it always won, and I really liked that Kanan line. It was a very Jedi line. Kanan was very Jedi this entire episode, and, like, just dropped all these really great lines, but I particularly liked him saying, like, there was a time where democracy always won, but it kind of reminded me of, like, the opposite line from Padme in the third movie, in episode 3, where she said that, this is how democracy dies with thunderous applause. It gave my mind like a callback to that, where it's like there was a time where democracy and diplomacy was actually like the way of how things were done.
Yeah, I think it was before any time we saw.
Yeah, and of course we don't really see much of that in the prequel trilogies, but you know, I really liked that was a very like good Jedi line from Kanan.
And when you look at I've seen and read through some of the old, you know, old set thousands of years back Jedi stuff, and there wasn't a lot of diplomacy in those either. So
yeah,
it's sort of it's an apocryphal time.
Yeah, and the only other note I had is that I feel like Commander Sato was a little out of character in this opening act. Because, especially when he was like, oh, we need to go in guns blazing to Concord Dawn. And yeah, Sasha's a military leader. But so far in the show, we haven't really seen that kind of side of him. Like, he's always very, diplomatic. And he's always, very strategic. And he's not one so far in the show to run in guns blazing. The only kind of difference was Stealth Strike, but that's because they were trying to escape and he was the first one to pick up a gun, which I praised him for. But it was just a really odd moment here because we haven't really seen that side of Commander Sato for him to be like, yeah, these guys are warriors, so we have to go fight them and show them our strength, which just is not what he's done at all in the show so far. So it was just a really weird moment for me.
Well, it's interesting because my first instinct upon when I agree with you that it's out of character with him, but he might have that might have been an intellectual decision of his. But my first instinct is to think, well, it's lucky they didn't go in guns blazing because that wouldn't have worked out. But then I started thinking about it and I'm like, well, diplomacy didn't work out. They went in and they just got they got a couple guys killed when they went in before. So it's hard to say. He might have been right. I want to say that I don't think he would have been right, but I guess we'll never know. But he might have been right. If they went in guns blazing, it wouldn't have been. Because I mean, the Mandalorians, like I said, did not fuck around. They were not like, let's fire some shots over their bow and scare them off and say, ha, don't come around here anymore, you rebels. They were just like, oh, hi, rebels, we were the Empire, you know, boom, and then they just went into attack and kill mode, you know. There was talk, banter back and forth, but that was just in, you know, they were not wavering from their resolve. So he might have been right, but we'll see in the long term, you know, in the short term of this episode, he was wrong.
Yeah. But that's all I had for Act One. So.
Yeah, it was an action. This is an action episode. There's not a lot of deep story. There's interesting story to this, and like we were just discussing earlier, this is more like what Blood Sisters should have been.
Yeah.
That didn't have a lot of that. That was a mostly action episode too, you know, these are both action episodes with Sabine's backstory coming to haunt her a little bit. And this one works a lot better, but has about as much, you know, deep story to action ratio as the other one, which is way more action to deep story.
And the majority of my notes are in season two, but I don't have any super duper deep notes for this episode. So here we go. Act two. I will let you know now, this has a really weird, I had no idea where to break that act two and three, so just follow along. It might be weird. So, well, because usually there's a very clear screen wipe, but the very clear screen wipe came 4 minutes before the episode was over, and I was like, not helpful.
It was strange, yeah.
Yeah, so I did the best I could, guys. I went off dramatic beats. Act two. In the medical wing, the three space kids are worried, waiting for any news about their mom. Finally, they're allowed in, and Sabine is the very most worried. And the Dr. Droid says that Hera, who is unconscious, will be okay in the end. Sabine blames herself for jumping to hyperspace without Hera, and Space Dad Kanan tries to calm her down. They leave Sabine alone with Hera for a moment, and Sabine swears revenge. And then, the angry 16-year-old girl kicks in the door to the briefing room going, Finn Rabelalicious! He did this! And Rex says that Raul Bulany used to serve the Republic back during the Clone Wars. I have to take a drink, because if I keep yelling this, I'm going to blow out my voice. Where was I?
You gotta wet your row whistle.
I do, man. I'm getting over a cold, too, so my voice is already a little rough. Anyway, Rex says that Rao used to serve the Republic back during the Clone Wars. And Kanan pulls out issue number 10 of his comic going, yeah, I know this one. I was in it. Buy my comic because it's great. I remember the third battle of Mygito. And Sabine has crazy eyes wanting some rawr skinned boots. And she's tracked them back to their moon where she's pretty sure they have a base. And they decide that if they can... Oh, that's why where they're set up. The moon. That's why they're not on the planet, because they're on the moon. I just realized that, because the planet... They probably can't be on the planet, because it's half blown out. I just realized that.
Probably can't keep an atmosphere on a half blown out planet, I would think.
Probably not. I just realized that. That's why they're there, because they're on the moon. Anyway. They decide that if they can sneak there and take out their fighters before they can launch, the rebels can take the base. Kanan doesn't want to lose any more members of the Ghost Crew, so he decides, well, I'm a Jedi, so I guess I'll go myself. And Sabine's like, well, I'm a Mando, so I'm going too. Plus, I swore to Hera's comatose body that I would. And Zeb and Ezra want to go too, but Kanan shuts all them down by taking Chopper instead. But Sabine put on her rebellious teenage pants on today. Kanan and Chopper hop onto the Phantom minivan and hop into hyperspace, where they arrive back at Concord Dawn. Sabine has stowed away in the ship and reveals herself as soon as they arrive, going, dude, I know you got the hots for Hera, but you're a freaking Jedi. You should have sensed me, man. What are you really up to? And Kanan comes out that he wants to finish Hera's original mission to try and recruit the Mandalorians. And Sabine is like, ugh, you know, you Jedi, you can't change everything. And then Kanan drops the best line of, and that's why we're at war, in his perfect sarcastic tone that only Freddie Prinze Jr. can do so well. They land out on the planet, which we now know is a moon, and Chopper takes the Phantom minivan away for safekeeping. They find the base and scope out a place to figure out how many ships to blow up. Just then, an Imperial shuttle arrives, and they watch the Imperials give money to the protectors of this area. And Rah-papa tells them that they've seen rebels lately, and the Imperial dude wants them to report if more rebels show up. But Rah-la-la-la-ding-dong all but flicks him off and sends the Imperials on his way. I really hope you guys are enjoying this as much as I am. And then Kanan has a plan. He's going to try and recruit the Mandos, and if that goes south, then Sabine can blow up all their ships. They sneak down to the base, where Kanan slips into a tent while Sabine goes to plant her bombs. Raul Meow Meow is not happy to see Kanan, and he offers to hear Kanan out before he kills the Jedi. Kanan shows Raul his lightsaber and thanks him for saving his little Padawan life at the time. And in case you haven't read the Kanan comic, Kanan recaps it here, saying that they got pinned down by droids, and Raul flew in with his men and cleared a path for them, saving their lives. And then Kanan says that Raul gave him a chance to live, and he wants to, quote-unquote, return the favor to give Raul a chance to live, which puts Rautatius on edge. And outside, Sabine is slinking around, sticking bombs on things. But then she is suddenly caught and surrounded by Mandos. And this episode has weird acts, so I'm just going to end it there on a cliffhanger. Bum, bum, bum. What do you think of Act 2?
I liked it. I had a question, but it's already answered. So it's just become a regular note. And I was going to say, this is the first time Kanan mentioned his master, isn't it? And it is on the show, but...
No, it's not. It's mentioned in the one where they go to find Luminara's dead body.
Because does he mention her by name?
Well, the Grand Inquisitor does. He says, your master is Master Bialaba.
You're right.
Yeah. Because I thought that note, too. I thought that, too. And I was like, is this the first time? I was like, no, Grande said it. I know Grande once.
My quickest note is I really like those Mando ships. And I love that every Mando, that Mando ships, that when they designed them, they took into account that Boba Fett was just a bounty hunter and he wasn't a Mandalorian. So that all the Mando ships just don't, like in a lesser franchise all would be based on sort of the Slave One design sort of thing. But no, they have slick evil, they're like little knives with rotating blades. I like them.
I love their ships too, and I love how they can spin like slowly or like really fast.
Yeah, yeah, they look deadly. They look like knives. It's really cool, and they look like they're very high tech too. It looks like they have a little more expensive technology than everybody else. Even the Empire, really, they look very sports car-y. Sort of space sports car. All right, this is just sort of a little personal thing, but all right, I understand Space Mom's down, everybody's upset. Space Dad, at least showing it, least of all. Space Dad's the one who's like, all right, let's handle this. But he also knows that she's going to be fine, too, by the time he goes off. So
I think if he didn't know, because I...
Right,
I
it might be different.
And I kind of had a note about that, too, because we know that he's upset, because I actually have a note that Sabine talks about how distracted Kanan was, because I was actually literally about to write the note, Kanan's a Jedi, how did he not since Sabine was on the ship? And she pointed out, she was like, you must be distracted because
he's thinking of something else. Yeah, and she's, you know, she's double mad because Mom is hurt and the Mandalorians are, you know, basically family too, you know, so her two families are clashing, and one of them, and the family she's mad at just like knocked out of her, so she's pissed, she's acting, you know, revengeful and crazy. But all right, Sabine's hurt, or I mean Hera's hurt, nobody's talking about poor fucking Fred there, who got blown out of the air. I think two of them are dead. Dead. Phoenix Squadron guys. Done. They murdered two of our guys. And it's just like, Hera's hurt. And it's just like, what about Frankie? Poor Frankie had a wife and kids. And look at him. He was only like 25 years old. He might have been only like 19. He looked young. Too young to be slaughtered by the Mandalorians. Nobody even mentions those guys. It was just like, oh, you know, just a little pet peeve of mine. But that's all I really got for Act Two, as it were.
So, sorry, I don't want to get a drink. Damn cold. Anyway, this is going to sound dark, but let me explain. I really like that they injured Hera this episode. Do you know what the concept of plot armor is?
Not as a definite, I can sort of suss it out by the name of it.
I'm going to explain it then. Plot armor is a trope where nothing can harm or go wrong for the protagonist because they're the protagonists. And I like to use the example of Jon Snow because he went through a lot of shit ton of battles and never died. Like, everyone else died around him except for Jon Snow. And so it's this concept that...
Well, except for that once when he died.
Yeah. But I mean, that's true. But like, I kept thinking about the Battle of the Bastards. I'm like, he should be dying. No. But like, plot armor is the concept that everyone else around the main characters can like die and be off and stuff like that. Except for the main characters who can never be hurt and they like miraculously make it out. So I liked that they injured Hera this episode because they're in a war. And it would be weird if all of them got out of this unharmed. And so I liked that they showed how, like, the stakes with the main characters, with one of the main characters getting massively injured and taken out of line, because
and
it really...
And she's the least likely, too, because she's the ace pilot, you know?
Yeah. And so it was a shock, because I remembered, like, at some point Hera got injured, but I couldn't remember the circumstances around it. And so when it happened, I was actually got shocked again, because I was just like, oh my god, Hera! And I was like, oh, I know she's going to be okay. But I remember the first time I watched this episode, I was like, oh my god, I don't know what's going to happen. Hera's hurt. Oh god. And so I really liked that they injured Hera because it really upped the stakes a lot for this episode because we didn't know she was going to be okay. Or if they were, and she's a brand new character. We didn't even know if she was going to make it to the end of the show. And of course, they break the plot armor rule with Kanan later on in the series. So I really am glad that they injured Hera because it really added to the stakes of the show. of the episode, I should say.
Yes.
I talked a little bit about Sabine, or Kanan not noticing Sabine, and then I wrote in really big letters, Kanan is distracted because of his love for Hera, and I just wanted to scream about their love, okay? He loves Hera. I love them. So, my next note is, we usually get Ezra with Kanan or Sabine with Hera, but I really like the dynamic of Sabine and Kanan together, because we haven't really gotten just the two of them. And it's a really nice, fresh take and a nice new, like, kind of, like, couple put together for the show.
It's a different dynamic, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't mean couple, like, romantically. I mean, like, a different couple of people going out and doing a thing. Ew, gross.
Combo.
And they do have, like, that dad-teenage-daughter kind of feel to it. I really like their dynamic. Because it's a whole of, like, but Dad, I want to blow stuff up. We're not blowing things up yet. Well, we might, but no. I really liked them together. You have anything else?
Not really.
Okay. And I also kind of like having Kanan there, too, to see a lot of this Mando stuff and Sabine, and, like, how it's, like, warping around Sabine. Because it's a nice setup for season 3 and 4. Because we know later on in the show, like, he's the one that trains her in the Darksaber. And he's so him seeing all this Mando stuff now really helps set up that plot line later, because he's seen it firsthand and he can understand where she's coming from when he's training her for the Darksaber later on in the show. So I really like that so much. I wrote, Concord Dawn's moon is purple and it's really pretty, but now we know that they're on the moon. So Concord Dawn is purple and it's really pretty.
Like a Concord grape.
Yeah, it's. I noticed it when they were landing, like when Chopper was dropping them off and they jumped off the Phantom. When they're coming in to land, you can see just this big, bright purple light in the sky. And, like, of course, now we know the correction that they're on the moon, so that has to be the planet.
That's its burnt up atmosphere after it was destroyed.
Yeah, but
it's beautiful.
It's really pretty, and I loved it. So I have to give a lot of credit to the Lucasfilm Story Group with the synergy for this episode, between this episode and the Kanan comic. Because I remember when that comic came out. I picked it up that Wednesday, I read it that day, and then that night when I sat down to watch the episode, when the episode aired, Rao and Kanan started talking about the third battle of Mygito. And I remember I pointed at the screen and went, oh my god, I just read that today. That's so cool, I just read that today. And so it was a really awesome moment where they, like, synced up the comic to be released the same day as the episode. And because that's, like, has to be very meticulous planning going.
Oh, that's okay, right, because you were in a comic shop, so you got it, like, right when it dropped.
Yeah, I remember I picked it up and I read it in the store that day, and then I went home that night and I watched the episode, and I was like, oh, it's the thing. And, like, that's hard, because when you plan a 12-issue comic along with, like, a 22-episode season, and you're trying to match up, like, issue number 10 with, like, issue number, like, what are we now, like, 28 of Rebels?
Well, this is the first time all those things have been under the same roof, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
like, it's probably a little easier to do that.
But, like, still, just, like, getting those schedules to, like, meet up to where, like, they both dropped on the same day. Like, and I was trying to find the tweet, because Greg Wiseman wrote the comic, and, like, I remember very faintly that he wrote something about, like, oh, if you enjoyed the comic today, like, watch Rebels tonight or something. I couldn't find the tweet for the episode. I looked for, like, an hour, and I couldn't find it. But I do remember him saying something like that. So I just thought that was just a really cool move that they did by dropping the comic in this episode on the same day to talk about the same battle, but from two different points of view and two different timelines, like the actual battle versus two people looking back on that battle. It was just a really cool moment of synergy with the Lucasfilm Story Group. I just had to call that out because I remember that. It was so cool to me that they did that. And my very last note is, for this act is, I love the move of Kanan showing his lightsaber to Rao. And I thought back to the episode of Legacy, where they found out about Ezra's parents and stuff like that. I had made a note that Kanan usually leads with his blaster first, and he tends to hide his lightsaber as a backup. But here, like, he leads with being a Jedi. So it's really cool to see him, like, change up that strategy for the situation, because he knows that that's what Rao is going to connect with.
Right. These are the Mandalorians.
Moment.
They're like Klingons almost, like in Star Trek. They're warlike, you know. So and also not only that they're like, oh, you know, someone with a lightsaber, I respect them, you know, as a potential ally or opponent. It's also the their history with the Jedi that it you know,
it's the history of these two individuals. Yeah, and it's the history of these two individuals. They were both at the same place at the same time, and he can be like, and like when he put it down, he's like, "This is my lightsaber because I was the Padawan you saved that day."
Yeah, and he acknowledged you saved my ass, you know. So yeah, there's that honor amongst, you know, of fighters, warriors.
Yeah. So I just really like that entire scene too, because you can see Rao, like he just has a look of like, "Oh, that was you. Cool. I'm still not joining you, but I do. I'm glad that you're here. Thanks. Now I'm not going to shoot you, but I might." So, like, that entire scene was great, too. And I was reading that they purposely staged it to look like a Western.
Oh, for sure. And it had a little bit of the cantina from Star Wars in it, too, with Han and Greedo. And I just as another note, I like Rao's voice actor does a really good job giving him personality. He's got an extra level of acting to it that makes him a very distinct person. I like it. I like the voice acting.
I didn't note it, but there's also a moment where like Kanan first sits down and he picks up a bowl of soup without like being prompted and drinks from it, and Rao just gives him a look of like, "Bitch, that's my soup."
I was soaking my dentures in that, but okay.
Whatever. He like raises an eyebrow like, "You touched my soup."
I drink your milkshake.
So, yeah, I didn't note it, but I just remember that. I remember I laughed at it because he just definitely gave Kanan a look of like, "Bitch, that's mine. What the hell? Don't touch my soup." But that's all I have for Act 2, which is where the majority of my notes were.
Yeah, we're back to some action.
Act 3?
Action 3.
Action 3. Sabine is surrounded by Meow's men and dramatically climbs on top of the ship to emphasize her drama is what I meant to say. And she proudly states that she forged her armor with her family and that she's Clan Ren, House Vizsla. Well, all the Mandos call her Death Watch and a traitor. And Sabine says that was her mother, but not her. And Sabine invokes a code for single combat. Back inside, Raudacious says that he doesn't want to fight another losing war for the Jedi. He ain't wrong there. And the Empire has money and resources. But Kanan explains that the Empire doesn't care about Mandalore. They're only in it for themselves. Excuse me. This gets to Rao a little bit. But he denies Kanan. And then one of his goons comes in and says, "Hey, boss. We got an angry 16-year-old girl who thinks that she can code us. She's code enforcement or something. Do you want to handle this?" And Kanan's like, "Oh, shit. I'm sorry. That's my kid. I'll go get her. I'm so sorry." And Rao's like, "Nope. She coded me. It's time to fight." Sabine, outside, calls out Finn Rao to fight. And she's fueled by hormones, bubblegum, and ass-kicking. And Sabine's all out of bubblegum. Kanan is trying to talk down his daughter, reminding her that Sabine getting her ass killed is certainly not what Hera would have wanted. But both Rao and Sabine are ready to fight, and Kanan is like, "You Mandos are all insane assholes! Oh my god!" And Kanan is quickly failing to talk his space daughter down, and a standoff goes down. And it's tense, and they're sizing each other up, and they're wiggling their fingers. It's like, who's going to shoot first? And then Han Solo is just like, "Not me, except because I don't do that till movie 4. And they're staring each other down. And they draw their blasters, where Sabine shoots Rao's blaster right out of his hand and blows up all their ships but one. And so Kanan snags his space daughter while Rao heads for the final ship that didn't explode. And they're pinned down, pew pew, and bicker about whether or not to kill people. And Sabine wants to capture Rao, and Kanan's like, "Fine, but don't kill anybody, okay?" And they rush out, and Sabine keeps the other Mandos distracted, and Kanan goes after Rog. And Rao takes off in the ship with Kanan on top of it, and Sabine calls Chopper, and they rush after Kanan and foul up in the sky. Why did I write foul? I ran out of things, apparently. and Kanan disables the ship with his lightsaber and cuts the top off. He punches out Rao, picks him up, and force parkours onto the Phantom. And they head out into space where Pow wakes up. I said Pow because Rao got punched. Anyway, Pow gets a call from his men, and Rao tells them to stand down. And his men are not to mention the rebels to the Empire, and they are to give safe passage to the rebels. And they take Rao Palau back to the Phoenix Squadron, where they put him in custody. And Ezra hurries up and tells them that Hera's awake and wants to see them. And my poor space mom, she's all hurt, but she's still glorious. And they have a really nice family moment where Sabine says that they raised her just right. And I have all the feelings. The end.
I have another. You never called him Chairman Rao.
Damn it. I actually use that joke a lot on my cats, which they don't appreciate because they'll be meowing at me and I'd be like,
Chairman Meow.
Yeah. And I'd be like, Spokes, who's your favorite chairman? And she'll go, Meow. And I'm like, yeah. Damn it. I should have put in Chairman Rao. I didn't think about that. What'd you think of X3?
I liked it. I love space battles in the atmosphere, and this one had a great one, you know, with a clinging to a ship that was similar to episode 2 with Anakin, you know, even to where he sticks his lightsaber in and funnels up the panel, which must be a Jedi trick that they train up, that they teach him. But it looked really cool. The only thing that was about it that was weird was you really didn't get any sense of there being any wind, you know, like Kanan's hair wasn't moving and like,
that's probably the animation thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 But it was really cool. But it wasn't until afterwards that I was just like, oh, that's weird. It just didn't have like, he was clinging to the side and stuff, but it didn't have that, like, you know, your lips peeling back wind pressure that you would have on that ship. But still, it was cool.
I have that note, too. Like, that entire fight is really gorgeous. It looks like they're flying through a painting.
Yeah.
It's just such a pretty, pretty battle. So, yeah, I had that note, too.
And I had Sabine saying the, you know, I've been raised right, you know, basically acknowledging her space family over her real, quote-unquote, real family. And my last note is simple, but it's kind of complicated. It's like, I'm not sure exactly what just happened there with how helpful it was. Like, when they kidnapped him, they captured him, kidnapped him, because there's no real reason to capture him. You know, he's not wanted by the rebels or anything. He's kidnapped. And
Kanan kind of glosses over it a little bit, because I thought about that too. And he explains to, I think, Sabine of, like, why, like either her or Hera or somebody said, like, why did we capture him? We're kidnapping
people now, yeah.
And he said, well, if we have him captured so his men can't do anything, because if his men call it in, then the Empire's going to show up on Mandalore. And they don't want the Empire to be controlling Mandalore because rebels are there. So it's kind of like a weird stalemate that, like, with them holding Rao captured, the Mandos can't do anything, and if the Mandos and Rao told the Mandos, don't tell them that the rebels are here. So if they don't tell the Empire that the rebels are there, then the Empire won't come to Mandalore and take over that area, because they don't want the Empire to be hard ruling it, because the Empire is a very soft rule over Mandalore right now. They're not really, like, enforcing it. So, like, that was my understanding of what happened, is it created, like, a very soft stalemate of, they won't tell the Empire that we're using this space, and they're not going to attack us because we have Rao. So that was my understanding.
It was weird. It just it's like, very fast. I'm used to that stuff.
I had to watch it twice to get the idea of it. So I get that.
Yeah, it wasn't very clearly done, and like, it's different than Clone Wars. You know, Clone Wars would have had a lot more of the politics in there to figure. You know, it would have been a little more political about it. And
so I did find it interesting when Hera was like, oh, we're taking prisoners now? And it made me go, how many people have you killed?
right.
Because I was, like, surprised. Because I thought about that a few... I think it was the episode where... it was the Princess Leia episode, because Zeb knocked out Kanan and Ezra, who were pretending to be stormtroopers. And the Imperial said, oh, the rebels take prisoners now? Oh, okay. And then Tara said in this episode of like, oh, we're taking prisoners now. And I'm like, how many people do you guys just murder?
But yeah, not just taking a prisoner, but they just like trespassed onto his into his space and grabbed him at the end. He didn't do anything. Well, except try to kill him, but they were trespassing in Mandalore land. They knew that pretty much that was going to happen. So, yeah, it's just a little weird. That's all I have on Act 3.
My first note, which is, I guess, my biggest note of the episode. This episode, the Sabine episode, is what Blood Sisters needed, which is specifics. Because we talked about that in Blood Sisters, because so much of Blood Sisters was just in tropes and cliches where it was like, oh, I'm not going to kill you, but I will, but I'm not. And like, there wasn't like a specific thing of like, you left me behind at this place on this job to kind of like show that Sabine and Ketsu had a relationship. It's different here because like, really it's the part where the Mandos have Sabine surrounded and they're like, where did you get that armor, you bounty hunter? You stole it. And she was like, I forged this armor with my family because this is my clan and my house. And like, I was like, yes, this is what I wanted in Blood Sisters, was something very specific. Because I can see in my head Sabine forging her armor with her family. That's a very visceral image of her life.
She hasn't even met these people before, and their relationship has a lot more reality to it than she did with the girl in Blood Sisters, because
with Ketsu, like, it's just something as simple as saying like, I forged my armor. And like, when she says I forged my armor with my family, that gives me the image of like, this is clearly like a rite of passage with her family. It was a thing that they did together. And I'm like, in just a single line, like, I understand.
And she's
that
saying
means.
Yeah, she's saying something to that, you know, she's identifying herself as one of them in that scene, and she's doing it by yelling at them, which is what they would do too. So they're just like, oh, okay.
You know. So like, that's what Blood Sisters was missing. It was something like that, which is like here's a specific thing that is very visceral and that gives you that image. I also like there's so many Clone Wars tidbits with her being Clan Vizsla or House Vizsla, because any Clone Wars fans knows exactly what House Vizsla is and like what happened on Mandalore and what House Vizsla did to Deth Satine. And it's a huge revelation that her mother was part of Death Watch. I remember the first time I watched that, I was like, whoa, Sabine's mom was part of Death Watch? Oh, like, and then that gives me so many details about her life of like who Sabine is, of like, her mother was a part of this regime that overthrew Mandalore's government and helped murder their duchess. So
it's
what
very
does that
Harry Potter.
Sabine? Yeah.
Your
and
mother
like
was
that,
a Death Eater.
Yeah. And that just tells me so much about like what Sabine is running from. So like this is just so much what I wanted from Blood Sisters, and why that episode failed for me where this one succeeds so well.
Yeah. A lot better. So, a lot better.
Yeah. My next note's kind of the same thing. I have to read this. I love all the Mando drama, because just like that one scene is so layered too. Because I was listening to Rebels Recon, and I mentioned this in my episode background notes. We know that the Protectors, which is who these guys are, they're the Protectors. And we know that they were the King's Guard. So I kind of realized that they were probably Duchess Satine's men, or they may have been on her side, since they called out Sabine's family for being traitors in Death Watch. So these are probably Duchess Satine's people. And Sabine's family, Satine and Sabine, why are you in the same, so similar? So like, these Protectors were probably Duchess Satine's people. And Sabine's family was the traitors in Death Watch. So there's so many layers going on there too. So, but it's all like really, really subtle. And I love having our hero Sabine, who had a family that was on the wrong side. It's just, it's all so good. And there's so many layers just sitting there that I realized, I was like, these are Satine's men. And Sabine's family destroyed it. That's so much drama and so subtle little lines. And it's just done really well. And my only other note was, I kind of like the 180 that Sabine has done over the course of the show. Because in season one, there was the episode where her and Hera went on the base with all the little feral creatures like running after them. And like, it was like very video game. They were blowing up these feral creatures and stuff. And the whole point of that episode was Sabine was having trouble trusting Hera. She didn't enjoy not being in the know. And she was like, Hera, you need to trust me. Like, I can take this information. And Hera was like, no, you need to trust me. Well, here in this episode, two separate times, Sabine tells Kanan to trust her. Because she's gained that, like, she's in that circle now. And I really think that changed, where before it was Hera going, you need to trust us. And now Sabine, only like a season and a half later, is going, Kanan, I got this. You need to trust me. So I liked that kind of development in her character.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, like, I was right along with Kanan, where I was like, really, really sort of sold on what a badass Rao was.
Yeah.
That and she was the only one there. She's like, oh yeah, no, I can beat him. And she was right. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, okay, this turned out different than I thought it was going to.
Yeah.
Which was with Sabine being dead, shot dead.
I do like the line of, like, in the standoff where she was like, Kanan, I really need you to stop talking right now.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah. Let the grown-ups fight.
Yeah. So, but that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, you want me to score this up?
Score it up. Score this Rao puppy up.
I thought this was just a generally strong, but you know, it introduces some new things in it, but it's still your sort of adventure by the numbers sort of thing. It's a heavy action episode, but I probably would have given it about an 8, but I gave it an extra half point, or maybe even like a 7.5, but I put it up to 8.5 because of just the getting it right this time with the whole with Sabine's past. Mm-hmm. And introducing the Mandalore. I think Rao is a strong character. And I like how they put the Mandalorians in this, just sort of on the edges, you know, with the protectors of Concord Dawn, but you know, not with full out visit to Mandalore, but that's coming. So I like how they did that. So 8.5 out of 10.
You know, we didn't even talk about that. That's how this is really working for the formula that we've been talking about all season of these transitional episodes. And I think I said it when we did Blessed Sisters, of like, what makes season 3 and season 4 so good is when Sabine has to face her past. And we see it here. Like, we see the first little glimpses here. And I really enjoyed this episode. Like, this is what Blood Sisters should have been for Sabine. Like, this is what was needed. And I also love the dynamic between Kanan and Sabine, which we haven't quite yet seen in the series so far. And we get to see really real stakes with Hera being injured. And there's so much Clone Wars stuff. And you know, we started our show on Clone Wars. And just thinking back to those Maul episodes and like what they mean now, like this episode kind of like goes back and like adds layers to those Maul episodes, because like the Protectors were probably Satine's men. Sabine's mom was probably in the throne room when Pre Vizsla was killed. So there's so much like it adds back to that episode, the Clone Wars. So I really, really enjoyed this episode. So
I just realized they've integrated Rex back into the show as a character so well that you weren't even just like in Rex, because Rex was in this, but he's just sort of like, you know, doing his thing, has a few lines. He's just like insinuated himself right into this show.
Mm-hmm.
To where it's not even like worth noting that he's there.
I almost noted, because Rex did say like, oh, the clones were trained by Mandalorians,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going, he can't be regarded like talking about Jango Fett, because Jango wasn't a Mandalorian. So I'm like, what other Mandalorians were like there? Oh, God. So, yeah. But I give the episode also an 8.5 out of 10. I really enjoyed it. It was so good.
Yeah, it was a fun one and pretty.
Yeah, so pretty. This entire episode was just gorgeous from beginning to end. So, well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Facebook page for our episode, Brothers of the Broken Horn. Take it away, Chris.
All right. We got one from Paul C. Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He says, I like that they made a lot of stuff happen in this episode within a short period of time. Oh, yeah. They escaped a couple Star Destroyers. only to run into Esmorgan, and then they have the Zago encounter. Looks like Hondo made a wife joke versus a mom joke. As Morgan says, I do not deal with washed up old relics, Hondo replies. Come now, let's leave your wife out of this. LOL.
I love Hondo.
Yeah, that was I couldn't remember the joke when we were doing the episode, the actual wording of the joke. So thank you for I was right. He did well, it wasn't a mom joke, but he did insult somebody very close to him that was female. So,
well, in case you don't know what we're doing next, Chris is weird. He hates American Kit Kats like a weird person. So our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. So as always, thank you, Dario. And Dario,
and if you guys try Kit Kats that aren't American from some other country, you'll be a weird person too.
Yeah. And Dario is co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. So thank you, Dario. This week, our candy is the Kinder Delice, Delice,
Delice,
Delice, Delice, and it's from Italy. So.
And hey, our boss is Dufo DiManzo from Milan. And I just the other day with Thomas DJ, I recorded two podcasts about two movies from Italy that were making me want to speak Italian. Now I'm eating Italian candy.
It smells so good.
Oh my god, it smells like just pure. It smells like chocolate cake.
Oh my god, it is chocolate cake. It is chocolate cake. Oh my god. Oh my god. It's so good.
It's kind of like a darker chocolate ho-ho.
Oh my god, so good.
But with only a thin layer of cream center.
Yeah. So there's like cake inside it. Oh my god. That's so good.
I purposely didn't have dessert today, and I'm glad I waited.
Dario, if you go back to Italy, please just send me one of these. They're so good. Oh my god.
Keep up with the delice.
I thought it was gonna be more wacky in the middle.
Delice.
Can we have these in America? Like, holy shit. Because I always get little Kinder eggs because I like these little Star Wars figures out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have a coupon for Kinder eggs, I'm just like, oh man, I'm going to get a Kinder egg for Star Wars. And I always like eat those up. But this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
It's like a ho-ho or a... What were they? Ding dongs?
It reminds me of a nice bakery. It has the same kind of flavor as a Swiss roll.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a Swiss roll. That's exactly. Yes, exactly. But it's a little. It's got a little more like home baked. Like you can taste almost some vanilla in it.
Yeah, like a dark chocolate Swiss roll. It has the exact same texture and flavor to it. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it's so good. Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else for Protectors of Concord, Don?
Nothing. I got
all left. Right, so where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is the podcast headquarters of, wait for it, Two True Freaks.
Whoa, no, yeah. Really?
I know it's a little counterintuitive, but we like people to work to be able to find us, you know. And there you'll find a list of all of our podcasts, both living and dead, active and inactive.
Schrodinger's podcast.
It is the Schrodinger's podcast website. And you can subscribe to any of our RSS feeds there, or you can subscribe to us at iTunes also. And you can also find us on Twitter. And our Twitter account is run by the incomparable Gene, the podcasting machine.
Row, 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 row.
Gene, who I know it's a couple weeks away because we record early, but just celebrated an anniversary, so.
Happy anniversary, Gene.
Congratulations, Mr. and Mrs. Gene. And the... Mrs. Podcasting Machine. Congratulations to Mrs. Podcasting Machine.
Row, 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 Gene's wife.
Who's a very nice lady. I've met her. I've been to a convention with the two of them and his daughter. So you can also find us on Facebook, where we have the Two True Freaks podcast page, where we also post all our shows. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is just a big meet and greet and hangout place and place to post news and reviews and all that stuff that nerds, you know what to do. But that's pretty much it. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuys and Jedi on Twitter. I also run our Twitter podcast, and you can also find me on Twitter at Hope Molinette. It's been out for several weeks now, but I just posted it for us in the Two True Freaks page. But I was recently on the website, on the podcast Lipstick and Lightsabers, where I got to tell my Star Wars story, so I just want to give it a pimp out. Oh, did you listen to it?
I have not listened to it yet. No, I have not had time yet.
Oh, it's, yeah. But, like, I got to tell my Star Wars story, so you can... I was a guest recently on Lipstick and Lightsabers. I talk about things I never talked about before, so just be warned about that. I also write fan fiction on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short. My name on there is Chaos Lydia. I just posted my newest chapter, Forces of Gravity. I'm kind of getting towards the end of Act 1 of my story, so that's coming up too. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com where I just write about stuff. I've kind of taken a summer hiatus, but as I was talking about at the top of the episode, I'm rewatching season 1 of Resistance, and I plan on talking about that, and I'm in the middle of writing that up as soon as I've already gotten, like, the outline and wrote the first, like, 4 pages of it. So, as soon as I finish rewatching the rest of the series, I'm going to finish my write-up for that over on geekygirlexperience.com. So, yeah. And you can buy me a coffee on there if you like what I do. So
buy this woman a coffee.
Buy me a coffee.
You can tell when I whip through my end thing that I'm really enjoying my candy this week. I don't even want to call it a candy. It's almost like a little cake.
But I know.
Before you finish it off, I just noticed this about it. Between the top layer of chocolate and the first layer of cake, there's a thin layer of dark chocolate, like super, like almost like syrupy chocolate goop in there too.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah. I almost didn't catch it, and then I caught it right in the right angle of the light. So there's even an added layer of awesomeness to this.
Well, gosh, Doug.
That's all I have. Oh, next week we're finally doing the Zeph episode.
Yay! Oh, boy. Settle in. Hope's going to be exploding with delight with this one.
You know, I was thinking about it, and I'll mention this again next week's episode, because I kept saying all season, like, oh, the big Zeph episode is the honorable ones, and that's, like, his transition episode, and that's where, like, we've been talking all season about how these are very transitional episodes for the characters. I'm wrong on that. I realize that. This next week's episode is the big Zeph transition episode, because the honorable ones is the Callus episode. And because I started thinking about it, I'm like, Zeph doesn't actually change at all in that episode. Callus does.
Right.
And so next week is the big Zeph transition episode that I've been waiting for.
Yeah, that one is like Midnight Run, and Zeph is, no, I can't remember, Charles Grodin, and Callus is Robert De Niro in that.
Yeah.
One.
I will say next week's episode has my favorite piece of Star Wars music ever written, which is Enter the Star Cluster.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful piece.
Like, please, when you're editing next week's episode, and I'll probably say it again too, but it's somewhere in the episode because it is my by far favorite piece of Star Wars music ever composed.
Well, a little behind the scenes on the show is when I score the episodes. Now, there's never enough music released from individual episodes to score all the synopsis, unless you do like unless they have like real long clips of music and you do a super short synopsis. There's never enough music to use all music from that particular episode. But there's usually two or three from each episode, usually three, which is, you know, I think they throw one in from each act. When they release them, but that piece is definitely going to be one of the pieces available for me because they made a big deal when that came out.
Yeah,
I think it was one of the first times that Kiner really got to use, if not the first time, if I recall right, that Kiner got to use a full orchestra and do a John Williams, you know, full orchestration version of score music for it. So it's appropriately rich and beautiful.
Yeah. So I can't wait. Well, that's all I have. I'm going to go watch the home run derby because it's been going on behind me. My boy Ronald Acuna Jr. is in it, and I'm going to go see how he's doing. So.
Okay, I don't know what you said, but have fun.
Yeah. Go Acuna!
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
I don't know what Gokunya means or what language it's in, but yeah. Well, hopefully. Yeah.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. Dumbass. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too. Thanks for listening. And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm nervous. Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.